fall of the Assad regime has had rippling repercussions throughout the Middle East. Russia has felt the seismic tremors as it has bases in Syria. Russian forces were invited by Assad to help Syria tackle ISIS and the motley band of rebel forces that joined its ranks to overthrow Syria's government in 2011. Russia signed a 49-year lease with Syria for the use of the bases in 2017. This gave Russia a Mediterranean naval base for supply and repair. The fall of Assad has put these bases in jeopardy, as the rebel forces that overrun the country were the ones that Russia was jointly combating with Syria. The rebel forces stopped short of the Russian bases, leaving Russian troops room to retreat to the safety of their bases. During a year-in-review press conference that lasted 2 hours, Putin responded to questions about Syria. He said, "We came to Syria 10 years ago to prevent the creation of a terrorist enclave there, like the one that we saw in other countries, for example, Afghanistan. We have achieved that goal by and large. Next, we did not deploy any ground forces in Syria. They simply were not present there. Our presence consisted solely of two bases, an air base and a naval base. The ground operations were conducted by the Syrian armed forces and, as is widely known, there is no secret here, certain pro-Iranian combat units. At one point, we even withdrew our special operations forces from the area. We were not engaged in combat there." So, what transpired? When armed opposition groups advanced towards Aleppo, the city was defended by approximately 30,000 personnel. However, when 350 militants entered the city, the government forces, along with the pro-Iranian units, withdrew without resistance, demolishing their positions as they left. This pattern was observed across nearly the entire Syrian territory, with only minor exceptions where skirmishes occurred. In the past, our Iranian friends requested assistance to move their units into Syria. Now they have asked us to help withdraw them. We facilitated the relocation of 4,000 Iranian fighters to Tehran from Khamenim Air Base, and some pro-Iranian units withdrew to Lebanon, others to Iraq, without engaging in combat. The situation in Syrian Arab Republic remains challenging. We sincerely hope for peace and stability can be restored. We maintain dialogue with all groups controlling the situation there and with all regional countries. An overwhelming majority of them have expressed interest in retaining our bases in Syria. End quote. Well, what is fascinating is where the Russian forces and equipment are being withdrawn, are headed. And it's not back to Russia. France's media outlet 24 reported the following on December 20th. By the end of the week, air traffic between Syria and Libya had increased. Russia was withdrawing significant amounts of military assets from Syria, primarily from its Khamenim air base in Latakia, and transporting them to Libya, according to several news reports. With Assad's sudden fall, Russia was scrambling to manage its considerable military facilities and personnel in Syria. More than a week after Assad's ouster, in a critical development, the Syria-Libya traffic has expanded to the sea. Russia has begun moving naval vessels on the Mediterranean from Syria, the port of Tartus, to Libya, according to U.S. news reports. The sudden collapse of the Assad regime in Syria has notched up the geostrategic scramble, sending ripples thousands of miles across the Mediterranean Sea, a vital maritime zone connecting the Middle East, Europe, and Africa. End quote. Well, the article went on to describe the geopolitical strategic importance of Russia's bases in the Mediterranean. It stated, Russia has a critical naval facility in the Syrian port of Tartus, which houses elements of the Black Sea Fleet and is Mossad's only repair and replenishment hub in the Mediterranean. Established by the Soviet Union in the 1970s, Tartus Naval Base was expanded and modernized by Russia after the 2011 anti-Assad uprising when President Vladimir Putin used military might to back his Syrian ally. Russia's reward came in 2017 when it signed a free-of-charge 49-year lease with Syria, granting Moscow's sovereignty over the Tartus naval base. The lease would be automatically extended for further 25-year periods if neither side objects. While HDS-led rebels now controlling Syria have allowed Russia to withdraw its military assets so far, the future of Moscow's permanent naval presence in the Mediterranean is far from certain. The crown jewel of Russian foreign policy in Assyria was not necessarily Assad. It was the military bases that they held there that enabled power projection in the Mediterranean. With Assad's fall, the focus has now shifted to Libya's 1,700-kilometer Mediterranean coastline, of which the eastern chunk is controlled by Haftar's armed coalition. End quote. While as Bible students, this is very significant. First, the need for a Russian naval presence is dictated in the scripture. When the king of the north comes down, it is described as coming with many ships in Daniel 11, verse 40. We read, "At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." Daniel chapter 11, verse 40. The fact Russia is determined to maintain a naval presence in the Mediterranean is in keeping with this scriptural directive. Second, the shift to Libya is also significant. When the invasion, which takes place at the time of the end, occurs, Libya is identified by both Daniel and Ezekiel as being a participant. The prophet Daniel tells us in verse 43 of chapter 11, "The Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps." This is translated in this ESV as, "The Libyans and the Cushites shall follow in his train." Likewise, Ezekiel includes Libya in the fray, where we read in verses 4 to 5 of Ezekiel 38, "I will turn thee back, put hooks in thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet." While Russia has long been courting Libya and lost a valuable ally when Gaddafi was deposed, Libyan strongman Khalifa Haftar, head of the Libyan National Army, or the LNA, has been wooed by Russia since he began his attack on the Western propped-up government based in Tripoli, in Western Libya, in 2019. It was Russia's Wagner forces under Yevgeny Prigozhinov that were key in helping Haftar. After Prigozhinov was killed in a plane crash, Russia's deputy defense minister, Yunus Bekyevgarov, has been running Russia's show in Libya. It was in early 2003, an article in France's 24 had the following to say: "The Russians have requested access to the ports of either Benghazi or Tobruk," the U.S. Daily reported, citing Libyan officials and advisors. Yevkurov's meeting with Haftar in August focused on discussing long-term docking rights in areas he controls in the war-torn countries east, the newspaper added. "It's about securing a warm water port on the Mediterranean at Europe and NATO's southern flank, which has been the covert objective of Russia for quite a long time, but on which it has made inroads, partly because its presence in Libya was never made fully official, let's say. This is slightly changing now, given the increased high profile and nature of the visits that we've seen with the Deputy Minister of Defense," said Imad Badi, a non-resident senior fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based Atlantic Council, end quote. Well, with the fall of Syria, this objective has been fast-tracked, and Russian forces and equipment are pouring into Libya by air and sea. The same 2023 article ended with the statement, "Russia is moving things into Libya because Libya is already an established hub for them. It's A rational move by Russia, not an escalatory one, said Megarasy. It's probably worse news for the conflicts that are going on in places like Sudan, Niger, and Mali, because a lot of equipment that comes to Libya ends up going to those theaters where it is in active combat. So we might see an escalation in those regions in the future. End quote. Well, this is also interesting, as Sudan is one of the countries that is part of the same confederacy that comes into the land with Russia in the latter days. Sudan was the ancient empire of Kush, which is named in Ezekiel 38 in the ESV. Persia, Iran, Kush, and Foot or Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet, verse 5. The fact that Russian escalation is going to affect Sudan is significant. Russia, as we reported earlier in the year, has also renewed its plans of putting a port on the Red Sea located in Sudan. The shakeup in Syria is pushing into place other countries mentioned in Ezekiel. Now, when you dissect the invasion described in Daniel, it is telling. We read in Daniel chapter 11, verse 40 to 43, "At the time of the end, the king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and many ships. He shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall also enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians, or the Cushites, Sudan, shall be at his steps." Well, there's a logical flow to this. Russia first enters Turkey, the Him that was the target of the British push back in 1917, which saw the Ottoman Empire dried up from the Holy Land. This has been the ambition for decades of Russia, to retake Hagia Sophia, the Vatican of the Eastern Orthodox Church, and restore Christianity to the church that has been serving as a mosque. From here, Russia enters into the countries by overflowing and passing over. Following this, he enters into the glorious land, the glorious holy land, which is, of course, Israel. But the area of Edom, Moab, and Ammon, or Jordan, whose capital is Ammon, escapes. He then follows down into Egypt. Now, looking at a map of the Middle East, we ask the question of what stands between Turkey, the hymn of Daniel 11, verse 40, and the glorious Holy Land, excluding Jordan that is to escape. Well, the answer is Syria and Lebanon. These are the two countries sandwiched in between. So, from all intents and purposes, they become targets of this latter-day campaign, indicating they cannot be fully under Russian control until then. So Russia may leave some forces in Syria, negotiating with the rebels to do so, but the eventual destiny of Syria is to be part of the path, or in the path, of the Russian invasion of the Middle East on the way to Armageddon. So we watch with excitement as we see events progressing and bringing us closer to the Lord's return. As we watch, we must also be as men that wait, as their Lord instructs us in Luke's Gospel in chapter 12, verses 35 to 37. "Let your loins be girded about, and your lights burning, and you yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, he may open unto him," or they may open unto him immediately. "Blessed are those servants whom his Lord when he comes shall find watching. Verily I say unto you that he will gird himself and make them to sit down to meat and will come forth and serve them." For the Bible in the News, this has been Jonathan Bowen joining you.